Thank you, Eric. And thank you, Nathan. I'm going to need this chair in a moment. How many of you know how to ski? Yeah, quite a few. But I see there are some folks who at least didn't raise their hands. Well, I want to tell you about how I learned to ski. And the reason I need a chair is because I learned to ski while riding in the passenger seat of an automobile. So I was a young lawyer going to a conference, and I was accompanied by a colleague, Bob. And we had rented a car at the airport and had quite a long drive to the ski resort where this conference was being held. So for Bob, who loved to ski, this was a little bit of a junket. And I didn't ski, so it was just interesting to go to a ski resort in Idaho. But when Bob found out that I didn't know how to ski, he decided, as we're driving from the airport to the resort, that he would teach me how to ski right there in the car. So I was sitting, and he told me, and you can try this in your seats too, go along with me. He told me to sit more on the edge of my seat. And he said, I'm not going to teach you to ski the way you see experts ski on television. I'm going to start you with the beginner method. And for that, you need to put your feet into kind of a V with your toes pointed together and your heels farther apart. He said, and you got to make sure that your toes are right underneath your knees and lean forward so that your shoulders are above your knees. So toes, knees, and shoulders all line up. I said, what about my ski poles? He said, ski poles. Beginners don't use ski poles. You don't need them, they'll just get in your way. If they give you ski poles when you rent skis, just tuck them under each arm and don't think about them. So I tucked them under my arm. He said, using the V, you won't go too fast, but you still have to go from side to side as you go down the slope. And that means you need to know how to turn. So he said, as you're leaning forward, the most important thing is to keep your weight forward. Because you're going downhill, you'll get scared and think, you'll lean back because you think, I don't want to fall. But if you lean back, you will fall. So always lean forward. Always keep your weight over your toes. So I said, okay, weight over my toes. And then he said, now, to turn left, you lean a little to the left and you put your weight on the left outside of your shoe, of your boot, of your ski. So with your shoes, imagine that the left foot has weight on the outside, and the right foot has weight on the side that's in the middle, or also the left side. He said, so you lean that way, and then to turn, you turn slowly by leaning slowly to the right and shifting the weight to the right side of each foot. And then you go back again, and then back again. He said, that's all it is. Just keep your weight forward, no matter how scared you get, and keep your feet with your toes together to make that V so you don't go too fast, and go slowly from side to side down the hill in a sort of S motion. And I asked him what I thought was a very important question. I said, how do I stop? Well, he said, forget all that stuff you see when people, swing around and a big wave of snow goes up from their skis. You're not going to do that. All you do when you want to stop is you just make that V shape wider. You put your heels out farther and your toes closer together, and you really lean forward, and you will stop. Well, I was a little skeptical. He swore, though, that I would be able to ski as soon as I got to the top of the bunny hill. So he got me out there. He got me all geared up. And I got to the top of the bunny hill. That was actually the hardest part of the whole day, because instead of a chairlift, it was a rope tow. And that I thought I was never going to learn how to hold onto the rope and have it drag me up to the top of the bunny hill. But finally, I got up there. And I was at the top of the hill, and it wasn't very scary. It was downhill, but it wasn't very scary. But Bob said, okay, you know, put your toes together. I put my toes together. He said, you know, and bend your knees, put your weight, line your knees and toes and shoulders up, tuck those poles and ignore them. And he said, now, just lean forward and you'll start to go. He said, and go left, and I went left, and go right, and I went right, and I S'd my way all the way down that little hill. And I got to the bottom without falling. It was amazing. Well, I thought I can do this, and I did it two or three more times on the bunny hill, the hill where all the five-year-old children were learning to ski. And Bob said, great, now you're ready to go up to the top of the mountain. Well, I wasn't so sure about that, but it was fun to ride in the chairlift, and it was a beautiful view. And he had warned me that I sort of had to leap off the chairlift, but just get to the edge of it and leap off, and it would be okay. And it was okay, although I did fall at that point. Bob got me up, and then he took me to the start of the beginner slope, the route that would take me down this incredibly high mountain, you know, in the Rockies with the sharp peaks. And I stood at the top, and this happened to be because of the vagaries of weather and wind. It so happened that the beginner slope began with a deep concave cut-in, so that when I stood on the edge with my skis sticking over, the hill actually went behind as well as down. Well, it took quite a while for Bob to convince me to go. And in fact, I wasn't able to just ski. He finally agreed that I could sit down and slide down the first 15 feet of the slope. So you can imagine his dedication to teaching me to ski. So he sort of winched me back up again, and there I was, and it was quite a gentle slope, starting down this giant mountain. And so I began, you can do it in your seats, I began to lean to my right and lean to my left with my toes in a V so I didn't go too fast. And you know, it took me all day, but I got down the mountain without falling. Imagine that. Bob left me after the first slope to go ski on the Black Diamond Expert Skier Hills, and he went up and down the mountain about six or seven times. But I had a great day, and I did learn to ski. And maybe some of you have just learned to ski. Now, what Bob was doing with me was both visualization and it was embodiment. He was having me not just think about what I was going to do, but actually feel it in my body, feel where my weight was, how my toes were angled, and imagine myself leaning first on the edge of one side of my shoes and then leaning on the other. And this embodiment with visualization is one of the best ways to learn any kind of physical skill. In fact, there have been lots of experiments. There was one with basketball, teaching college students to shoot free throws. And they divided the kids into two groups. One group had lots of court time practice, and the other group had a little bit of court time, but spent most of their practice visualizing how to move their body, lift their arms, release the basketball, and visualizing it going through the hoop. And at the end, the group that had the best score at shooting free throws was the group that had done the visualization, even though they had less court time. So this is something we really understand scientifically happens with the mind when you get the mind and body working together, when you really get this kind of embodiment. Professor Anders Ericsson of Florida State University wrote a book that came out last year called Deliberate Practice. And he talked, it's called PEAK, The Secrets from the New Science of Expertise. And he talks about how people become experts. They become experts through this deliberate practice. He explains that there's a difference between, regularly playing tennis with your friends. You know, you're having fun, you're practicing, but it's not that kind of practice. Deliberate practice is more like working intentionally with a tennis coach on a particular skill. And it's important to have both, to have fun, to enjoy playing with friends, but also to spend time in deliberate practice on the areas where you'd most like to improve. And if you enjoy the activity enough, you'll be motivated to continue practicing, and you'll hone that ability until it seems effortless. But to get there, it takes deliberate practice. Now, these lessons apply not just to physical skills, sports like basketball or skiing. They work for skills of the mind as well. Skills like drawing or painting, playing the piano. Maybe those of you who love Jane Austen's novels remember this little scene from Pride and Prejudice, when Mr. Darcy, who at the beginning of the book is rather standoffish and stiff, is talking to Elizabeth Bennet, who is lively and witty and easily engages with people. Mr. Darcy says to Elizabeth, "I certainly have not the talent which some people possess of conversing easily with those I have never seen before. I cannot catch their tone of conversation or appear interested in their concerns as I often see done." Elizabeth replies, as she sits at the piano, "My fingers do not move over this instrument in the masterly manner which I see so many women's do. They have not the same force of rapidity and do not produce the same expression. But then, I have always supposed it to be my own fault because I will not take the trouble of practicing." Now, I realize that this sermon is sounding a bit like one of those self-help books. But there's a point to all this talk of practice. Deliberate, intentional, focused practice works not only to build skills of the body and mind, it also works, and in fact is essential for, skills of the spirit. Meditation practice. Scientific studies of the brainwaves of Zen Buddhist monks have shown that these monks, who have practiced meditation for more than 10,000 hours, have brainwaves that are different from those of an ordinary person. They're able effortlessly to fall into the alpha state, which is the relaxed and positive state that benefits the body physiologically. Meditation practice, it's called practice because it's important to practice. It's never something that you're done with. And if you're too goal-oriented, in fact, it will interfere with your ability to improve. And more recently, there have been studies that have shown that even ordinary people can benefit, that their brains actually change in a positive way from just 10 minutes a day of meditation practice, deliberate, focused meditation practice. Now, you'll need 10,000 hours to be like those Zen Buddhist monks, but your own brain and the physiology of your body can improve in just 10 minutes a day. That is amazing. We humans learn by doing. We have to embody what it is we're trying to do, whether it's learning to ski or really feeling the slow movement of the breath through the body as we practice meditation. This engagement of our whole selves is really important to our health and well-being, and also to mastering any of the skills or attitudes that we'd like to master. This basic premise applies to everything we do. And here at First UU, in this beloved community of people who are committed to place love at the center of all their actions, we have been practicing together for the last 2 years. We've been practicing adjusting to change. We've been practicing how to enter into authentic relationship with someone who is different from ourselves. Authentic relationship with someone who thinks or behaves or believes in a way different from what we know. We've been practicing inserting a pause before issuing a condemnation of something new or different. Instead, we've learned to make that pause and to listen, to be curious, to be open-minded. The skills that are essential that we've been practicing are also essential as you build your new relationship with your incoming senior minister, Reverend Marian Stewart. It will also be important to continue the intentional and deliberate practice of openness, attentiveness, and inserting that pause before judgment. The practice, the intentional, deliberate practice of spiritual virtues, of acceptance, respect, compassion, generosity, openness, welcome, is what it takes to be the kind of people we want to be, to make our lives convergent with our most cherished beliefs. And there's something else that we've been practicing together here, but for not quite as long as some of these other spiritual virtues. We've been practicing here for about the last year, how to talk openly and with love about the need to support the financial requirements of this congregation. And it's been amazing to see the difference. And yes, there's still a little ways to go, $17,000 more to close that budget gap. But you've had warm and heartfelt conversations during the spring's house parties. And as a matter of fact, I wanted to share with you, people at the house parties made a list of some of the things they thought were really important about this religious community and the things that they really valued about it. And the idea was to put them in, people contributed one word each. That was the notion. I brought one of the lists in. Just, we did this very informally, wrote them up on, flip charts. And this one has youth at the top with an exclamation point because people think that the way we help our youth grow up here is really important to them and to the world. Critical thinking, growth, not the number of members, but personal and communal growth. Community, home, ministry to others, values in action, comfortable and challenging, service and giving back. That is the First UU I have come to know and love. That may fall off. It will be all right. generosity and commitment are both skills of the Spirit. They're both skills that improve with practice. What I've seen here over nearly 2 years of my experience of this warm and welcoming community is the emergence of a clarity of vision, a confirmation of purpose, a waking up to awareness of your values and of the world's need for your values. And I've seen the beginning of deliberate practice to live those values both here inside the walls and everywhere. It's not that you weren't living your values before I came, but I'm now seeing the beginnings of the deliberate practice, the conscious awareness of practicing those values. I've seen this community gradually and visibly embody the values that you have always cherished. I've seen you learn to ski. And I'm confident that you will grow boldly into your future. I'm confident that you'll continue to place love at the center of all of your actions as you work and continue to work to create community, work for justice, and engage diversity. And fully fund that budget.